Today's podcast is sponsored by RadRx, your source for quality online education for interventional and diagnostic radiology coding, taught by subject matter expert Stacy Buck. For more information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Struggling to learn interventional radiology coding? If so, RadRx has the perfect solution for you. Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology online training program. In this program, interventional radiology coding expert Stacy Buck breaks down the complexities of interventional radiology coding in easy-to-understand terms so you can grasp this complex specialty. Through her course, Stacy has assisted many coders with little or no interventional radiology coding experience in successfully passing the CIRC exam on the first attempt. For additional information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says, a podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level. And now, here's your host, Stacy Buck.
Welcome to another episode of Who Cares What Stacy Says. I am your host, Stacy Buck. Today's episode is titled,
Show Me the Money.
In this episode, I continue the conversation with my friend and colleague, Christine Hall. We begin with Christine's personal story about taking a step back in her career, leading her to find her angel, and then taking a big career step forward. We also discuss strategies to increase your salary in your current position, and we provide advice for negotiating a salary when interviewing for a new position. We also examine the concept of pay transparency and discuss some of the differences between men and women when it comes to selling themselves to employers. And now here's part two of my interview with Christine Hall. Enjoy.
Show me the money.
Well, let me ask you this. So who has been the most influential person in your career, or, you know, maybe who's been your biggest professional mentor? I know I've had a lot of people who kind of influenced my career path. So who would you say was that important person for you?
Well, of course, my dad has always been my biggest cheerleader in life, but professionally, I was blessed with an angel, and her name happens to be Angel. So, aww. Yes, the short of the story is that, my career progressed very rapidly. I started in the hospitals. I found myself in my mid-20s, already the director of medical records for a skilled nursing facility. And then I also became pregnant with my youngest child. And I had always worked so much. I'd always, had the baby, and 2 weeks later, I'm back at work. I'm back on the grind, and nothing stops me. Nothing slows me down. But this little guy was different. I fell in love with him in a way that I couldn't even begin to tell you. And when it was time to go back to work, my heart was just broken into a million pieces. I couldn't think about leaving this little guy so early, and we just met each other. So I had a wonderful job to go back to, but I ended up going to the unemployment office just to see what they had available. I didn't quit my job yet, still on maternity leave. And I said, I don't want to go back there. I want to have something that maybe I can do work from home, or, some different opportunities. And the gentleman who was sitting in the booth behind the booth that I was in being interviewed or being talked to, he stood up and he said, I hate to eavesdrop, but one of the ladies that works for unemployment, her sister owns a billing company. And I don't know if she's hiring, and I don't know if she's interested, but I would love to connect you two together.
Nice.
So, long story
short. Some more divine intervention, see?
I'm telling you.
Absolutely.
I met with Angel a week later, and she offered me a position making a fraction of what I was making. However, I was able to drop my kids off at school in the morning and pick them up in the afternoon, and I could bring my baby to work. And a year later, she sold me the business, and that was when I started.
Wow.
I had the billing company. So really, and she came in every Friday and helped me with payroll and invoicing and the business of it that I wasn't that strong about, didn't have that background. She helped me. She mentored me. And to this day, she's my go-to person when I have to make a decision. You know, do I take this job, or I have a large client, or, you know, I just need some moral support from a professional standpoint. My angel is always there. So, yeah, divine intervention has been the story of my life. And
that is awesome.
Yeah. And if you can't get any more in your face than an angel in front of you, then I really don't know, you know? So yeah, she's my go-to person when, you know, I lost my dad in 2019. So I think I've relied on her so much more now than I ever did before, but yeah, that's.
So and that's awesome that she's still a part of your life all these years, you know, later. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, I like that story because it illustrates that you took a step back before you took a step forward. And that step back led to a big step forward. And I know lots of times when we have people that are trying to break into the field, if they've been in another field, for example, a lot of times I hear, and you probably hear this because you deal with a lot of students, well, I work in this industry right now and I'm making this kind of money and I'm looking at entry level positions over here in coding or HIM, and it's not anywhere near what I'm making. And I can't afford to take that pay cut. And then they feel that they wasted all this time and effort, you know, in their education because they can't get a job making money. And I understand everybody has a certain level, you know, of income that they have to achieve. But sometimes when you're switching careers, it can be moving from HIM into something else. You're an HIM professional, right, and you want to go in another direction. You may have to do the same thing if you've achieved a certain level within the HIM profession. So, you know, what advice would you give there for those who are feeling frustrated in that situation and they just want to give up and walk away because they feel that they can't do that?
Well, don't give up, because again, you're not sure what's coming around the next corner. And so, for example, I share with my coding students, you know, if you go to work for a practice, and say it's a small practice, 25 or less providers or even smaller, stick your head in the billing department. See mm-hmm. what you can do to help without outstanding AR. I know that right. people are much more valuable mm-hmm. when you can go to the table and say, you know, I've been here 3 months, and in 3 months' time, I've been able to capture an additional 40, 50,000 in outstanding AR that mm-hmm. wasn't being worked, that wasn't being collected. It was lost revenue for all intent and purpose. And I would like a raise. And so you can see where if you know, get your foot in the door, something as small as within 90 days, you can make an impact or advance your knowledge, find out what the other positions are doing, be flexible, become the asset that they just can't get rid of because you have so much knowledge, you bring so much to the table there. And the other thing is when you do make these choices, you have to also see what are the little benefits that you're not looking at. When I took this position that was significantly less, I also gave up aftercare. I gave up daycare. I gave up, you know, the driving that I was doing to the other facility because the billing company was so much closer. You know, look at it from a global perspective and then see what other advantages this employment can give you. So I always tell my students, negotiating your salaries, make sure that you're getting all of your dues paid. Make sure you're getting your CEUs paid. You know, if it's not the salary that you were looking for, see what other little perks, you know, memberships can be. I'm paying over $1,000 a year in memberships and dues. Take that off my plate. Buy my books.
That's another thing that professionals complain about a lot, or professional dues. Yes, definitely.
But, you know, look at it from that perspective. There's another way to advance your salary if you start asking for these other little things. And it might be easier for the employer to say, sure, I'll pay for you to go to HealthCon, or I'll pay for you to go to IMA's annual conference. And, you know, that all adds up. And the knowledge that you get, they can't take that away from you. It's yours. It's part of your assets.
Yeah, absolutely. So I can talk about that a little bit from my experience. So, I mean, I did have the advantage that I was already working in medical records when I started my education. So that is truly an advantage if you have that. But I can say that on the job, how I navigated things. Now, initially, when I started out working as an adult, I completely sucked at like salary negotiation. I was horrible like at it. And over the years, I learned on how to deal with that. And that's something that I wanted to talk to you about today. So you kind of started going in that direction. So we'll go there in just a moment. But in the earlier jobs that I had, what I always did is I would always volunteer to do more. If there was a new project that came up, if there was a new task that came up, if there was a new technology in particular that was being implemented in the department, I always volunteered to be the one to take charge of it, learn it first and teach other people, and then take it and run with it. And when you're volunteering to do more work, no one's going to tell you no if you want to do more work. Now, you're asking to do more work and you're not going to get any more pay. And initially, you have to be willing to do more than your job description without the expectation of getting paid. But once you have a proven track record that you're reliable and you're worth an increase in pay, you can go and ask for more money. Most people are accustomed to getting that annual pay increase once a year. You get your annual review. You know, these days you're lucky if you see 3%, you know, on that. Years ago, you could maybe get 5 to 7. Now you're probably looking at more of like a 3 to 4, which is more standard. But multiple times in jobs that I held for several years, I would get pay adjustments. Forget the annual pay increase. I would get significant pay adjustments that were way more than the increase. Once I had proven that I could do the job, I was doing more, and this is what I feel that I'm worth, I would go to my boss and say, I would like to get paid more. And I would always be accommodated. There is not one time in any job, not one time ever, that I asked for more money and did not get it. And we're not talking annual pay increase time. We're talking, look, I've come into this job. Even when I was moving up, when I got the one job at US Diagnostic, the starting salary that they offered me, I wasn't thrilled with. It was more than my prior job, but I thought to myself, what you're offering me is worth more than what you're willing to pay. But I hated the job that I was in. And I was also commuting about 45 minutes to 50 minutes to get to work. And this would have only been about a 15, 20 minute drive to work. Oh, so there were some other things at play and I wanted to do something different. I wanted to escape where I was. So it made sense to make the leap. And then after I was in the position for, I don't know, maybe it was, I don't think I quite had hit 6 months. I think I was just shy of 6 months when I had went in the door and I proved my value in everything that I could offer them. I said, I want to make more money. And I did eventually get paid more money. Now, my boss at the time was not thrilled with my request for the pay increase because she was underpaid, but she would not go to bat for herself. I basically was like, you're going to go to bat for me or I'm going to go to bat for myself. This is how this is going to go down. So I would have gone over her if I would have needed to. And she went to bat for me. I got my pay increase. Mm-hmm. And then she actually admitted to me that bothered her, that occurred. Well, advocate for yourself and know your worth, because she could run circles around anybody in that company.
Yep. A very strong woman that I worked for told me the exact same thing. Don't be upset that you didn't negotiate your salary as well as you could have. Reach for the stars. Be proud of what you can do. And if they can't see that at first, then be that change. Go in and show them and prove it to them. Yes. And like you said, and I'll be honest, I have kids that are millennials and that are Gen Zers. And I hope that some of the younger generation are listening to your podcast and embracing this information and this knowledge, because there's no employer out there that is going to knock on your door and say, oh, I just have to have you. Not when you're just coming
into
this.
Let me throw money at you, please.
Right.
It's very rare that someone will aggressively pursue you and offer you a lot of money. That's extremely rare. You got to be top of your game, tippy top. And even that's rare. You got to be something pretty darn amazing.
So you have to be proud of yourself. Go and take these positions and become that asset. Do the extra mile. Go in. Ask for that extra work. Stay late. Read more. Educate yourself. Become that asset. That's how that happens. And I know that it's not fun. People laugh at me all the time, Stacey, because like when the guidelines came out for ICD-10, I was so super excited. Like I had got my hot chocolate. I had got my favorite blankie, my highlighter. I sat down to read the guidelines, you know, People are like, you're nuts, Christine. Or, you know, the Consolidated Appropriations Act was like 2,400 pages. Same thing. It was like, oh, I can't wait to read this, right? Because it provides you with all this knowledge that you become the asset now. You know, let me tell you all the things that are changing and how we can use that to our benefit. So that's my advice to these young people going in there is I know that they're not going to pay you today, but how about you think about that scholarship that you got to college? You had to work 4 years of high school to be able to be eligible for that scholarship. And some of the scholarships, I know in the state of Florida, that Bright Futures is like $40,000 for school. So, you know, hard work does pay off in the end, but you have to put that hard work in first. You have to be willing to go that extra mile to become that resource there, that value.
Yeah, definitely. With employers, you have to show your value. You have to, you know, people say, oh, everyone's replaceable. Okay, I would take issue with that. Can you replace anyone with anybody? Absolutely. You can find somebody else to come in and do the job. But there are certain positions that certain people excel in, and the next one, two, three, four, five people that come behind them may never achieve that same level in that position. That's a simple fact. I do feel to a certain degree, some people are irreplaceable. I can also tell you this, anytime I gave my notice to leave a job, I was always given an offer to stay, that the company did not want to lose me. Early on, I did decide to stay at the one job for many different reasons. But along the way, when I feel that it's time to leave and I feel strongly about it, it's time to leave. I'm going, you know, and I'm going to advance in that. So we've touched a little bit on the issue of salary, and that is always an area I feel that people want advice and how to negotiate salary. And I know there's a lot of debate out there on LinkedIn about salary transparency. And there's this big move where people are demanding that employers post salary ranges for positions and that there's salary transparency and people should know what other people make. I don't know about you, but I have mixed feelings on that. Even as somebody who's a job seeker, if I were to put myself back in the position of seeking a job and interviewing with employers, I don't know that I necessarily need that or would have that expectation. But let's kind of camp on the salary thing for a while. So maybe we can talk about that. Or, you know, there's a lot of things we can talk about with salary. So let's start there. What are your thoughts and feelings about this whole concept of salary transparency?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts about that, Stacey, because again, I have people in my immediate world that are multi-generational. So I'm looking at this much deeper. I don't necessarily look so much myself for salary because now I'm at a point where I know what my worth is. I know what I'm going to ask for.
You and I are doing consulting, which is a whole animal. Your rates that you have set, and then they do get modified from client to client, project to project, but it's pretty much set. If you don't like my rate, then you can walk. That's how I conduct myself. I'm sure you're probably the same way.
But even if I was to go out, even if I was to go out and find another position, say, I just want to go work for somebody, which I don't think anybody wants me to work for them. I'm too opinionated.
Oh, but that's not true. You'd be an asset. I mean, you do have a lot of opinions on things, but you would be an asset. Now, see I would love working with you because you're like funny, you're fun, you have great like people skills. And so we're going to go off into like a side like story here, like tangent for just a moment. Now, one thing that I like about Christine that we've been out in public now together several times, she will talk and interact with other people while we're out in public.
Are you going to tell the story about?
Totally fine. So the last time we got together, we were having lunch and this woman kind of interjects herself and asks about, you know, the area. They're contemplating maybe relocating to the area. And Christine is just so, you know, warm and friendly and launches into this big sales pitch about her area and how great it is. And then the woman says, oh, wow, are you a salesperson? Wow, you make a great salesperson. So where you probably thought I was going with that is here. So, okay. So later, when we go to have coffee, we're sitting at the coffee shop. And this little boy is wandering around our table outside the coffee shop. She's laughing because now she knows where I'm going with this. So this little boy comes wandering over and he looks at the two palm trees that are near our table and he sees hooks in the palm trees. So he walks over and he asks us why there are hooks in the trees. So we explain it's probably because someone had a hammock in the trees. Well, he proceeds to hang around. And so Christine engages him in conversation. So they're going back and forth. And for some reason, Christine starts to talk to him about having five children. She mentions to the little boy, oh, I have five children, you know, in response to whatever he said. And he says, why do you have five children? And to which Christine responded, I didn't have cable in the 90s. Now, the look on the kid's face was one of like mass confusion. Now, this was a smart little boy around the age of five, I would say. He was super smart, talking to us about space and the solar system, but he didn't quite understand what Christine meant. But then the dad did chime in and said, well, he is not allowed to watch TV. So maybe that's why he didn't understand the cable comment. I don't know. But see, that's just a great reason why it would be so awesome to work with Christine, just for moments like that.
We have cable now. Don't worry. We're all good now. Yeah.
And if the cable goes out, you have Netflix. You've got the streaming
right,
services.
Right, exactly. I have Hulu. I'm good. Yeah, besides, I think I'm too old to have any more kids.
Technology, it's possible.
Yeah, no, there's not enough technology out there. Oh, yeah. No, I love people and I love talking and I love sharing and I love educating and I love engaging with people. You know, I think I'm definitely a people person.
Definitely.
And I liked the fact that the little boy was interested in having a conversation. Like, he just pulled up a chair and sat next to us and yes. Didn't know us from Adam and just started having a conversation. Like, what's your favorite planet? Well, are we going there? That's it. I can see Stacy's face. Like, keep it PG, Christine. Keep it PG. Don't tell him. Okay.
He was adorable, and it was funny. So after he conversed with us, I should say really you, was with you, not so much with me. He wasn't even looking at me. His dad finally tells him that he has to leave, and he says, no, I want to sit here and talk to the lady. He didn't want to leave. So that was awesome. He was so enthralled with Christine and the conversation that they were having. So, okay, so now we got to go back to salary.
Right.
So back to the concept of the pay transparency. That's what we were talking about. Everybody wants to know what the salary range is and what everybody makes. So your thoughts on that?
Well, again, that seems to be the norm. And I think it is generational. I think I also think that the younger generation has a more difficult time with the cost of living right now. I know a lot of the Gen Zers and the millennials that they are living with each other. There's roommates. That's a really big thing now because of the cost of living. So for them, that salary transparency is important. Do I invest my time even applying and waiting and interviewing for this position that isn't going to meet my needs? So from that perspective, they really do rely on that salary transparency to see, based on their knowledge, skills, based on their education, is this a good pursuit? Whereas I think that the older generations that we are already set in our careers, we already have an idea of what that salary is for that position or what are the expectations are. We don't look so much at the importance of that transparency because, again, we're talking apples and oranges. We're so far advanced at this point. But those that are just coming into the industry, they factor that salary transparency into the effort on whether to apply or not. So
yeah,
it's that the answer is generational, I think.
Yeah, we never had salary transparency. Like didn't know. I mean, unless it was a government job that's posted, government jobs do post the salary range. If it's a private company, you never knew a salary range. And in interviews, what I would do as I got more skilled at interviewing and I had done more of them. I did a ton of interviews after I graduated college and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I would always try to ask them the pay range before they would ask me what I wanted to make. I would try to beat them to the punch.
That's so that a very my, good strategy.
That was my strategy when I was younger. And sometimes it worked and they would be open about it. And other times they would deflect and they would ask me what I wanted to make. So it worked sometimes and other times it didn't. So I'm gonna turn this a little bit here and we're going to go, it could be a little bit of a controversial direction. And so I don't think that you'll shy away from it. We're both very, we have very strong opinions on things, but I see a lot. So about the pay transparency thing, there was something I saw on LinkedIn the other day, and this was a big debate talking about pay transparency, or could have even been on Facebook. Somebody brought up the pay gap between females and males and was hammering that point to death and saying that we need to know what everybody makes because women will never be paid the same amount as a man unless we know this. And you and I have never spoken about this, so I don't know what you're going to say. I don't know if we're going to agree or disagree on this particular point. So what are your thoughts on that whole argument where people say, where people are putting forth this argument that women are paid? I forget the exact numbers. Maybe it's 70 something cents on the dollar compared to a guy. I don't remember exactly, but do you think that that is a fair argument, or do you feel that that argument is misused? I guess that's how I want to phrase that question. I think you know what I'm getting at.
I know what you're getting at. And my answer is going to be, again, I think it's generational. Our generation, definitely, I found it that there was, the candidate was between me and a man, that for some reason, the men got the position there. I think as we are looking at some of the younger generation, kind of blurred, maybe the millennials are blurred and the Gen Zers, the younger ones, I think that the salary range is pretty equal or as close to equal as it can be. Just from what I hear, again, I have young people in my life, my kids and their wives and their husbands and their friends that come over and they chat. And so there's a salary range or a salary that is for that generation. So they're making, you know, whatever it is, 60K, and that's the job, whether you're male or female. But I know that during my career that I have had that struggle of other people coming in that don't have the same experience that I have, but they're a male, and so they were able to take the position. And a couple of times I've had that experience where I needed to coach that person that received the position that I did not receive. That I would say that it's, again, I have to go back to generational. I think we're becoming a little more open. The younger generation is open to so many things and they're looking at things laterally, where our generation just wasn't.
Yeah. So I have a lot of thoughts in this area and okay. I could go in a lot of different directions like with this. So I think I have a hard time in any area with blanket statements. I think you and I have known each other and we kind of had this discussion. I tend to fall, in spite of what people may think about me, who've heard my opinions, I tend to kind of fall in the middle, I think, on most things and trying to look at things in a more balanced way. And I'm also a big proponent of personal responsibility in situations and taking personal responsibility for things. Now, I will agree with you that there are, now the opinions that I'm sharing today, I'm not saying that any opinion I share, I'm not saying it is like this 100% of the time. I want to be clear before I step off this cliff, okay, and possibly upset people. But I think this is an important discussion to have because our profession is predominantly women. It's dominated by females. And so I think that we should talk about females negotiating salaries and talk about these issues for that reason. Now there's no doubt in my mind that there are, like you shared, that men got the job over you in certain situations. There is no way that you will ever overcome a personal bias that someone has. There are always going to be those inherent biases that people have towards hiring a man or a woman for a particular position. And that's something you don't necessarily know in dealing with a person, whether it's that or not. It's just there. People are always going to have a personal preference in a particular situation. So that could be a factor. Now, this is something that I've kind of noticed with men. Now, let's say, you know, you mentioned that you're training people who are less qualified than you, and you know this, and they're your male, you know, mm-hmm. they're males in these positions. For some reason, and again, men, if you're listening, please don't take this as I'm disparaging men 100% across the board. These are more anecdotal observations that I'm putting out there. It's more for food for thought. I'm not trying to paint with a broad brush. So I guess that's my disclaimer. I am not trying to paint any group, male or female, with a broad brush. But men seem to be much better, from my observations, at selling themselves for a position, even when they are not the best person for the position or the most qualified person for the position. For some reason, they have an easier time portraying more confidence in their lack of qualifications than a woman has putting forth that confidence for her amazing qualifications. I feel that women aren't as bold in selling themselves and promoting themselves. Again, I can't say this is across the board 100%. My observations, women don't go the extra mile. I almost want to say, I have to say it this way. Again, I don't mean to offend. I feel that with certain men, we'll say this, there's a certain arrogance about them that gives them the edge. I guess that's like what I'm getting at.
Well,
women seem to lack that, based on my observations in my career.
Well, you know, somebody got very famous on Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. But I also like to look at, men have that waffle mentality where they look at individual boxes. And so if they're very proud of a particular box, then they can just present that way. Where women, we're spaghetti. We're thinking of five different things at the same time. And did I answer that right? And is my hair right? Do they like me? Oh my gosh, is the makeup running? Was my resume clear? Oh my gosh, I forgot to put that on my resume. How important that would have been. Yeah, we have a lot going on in our mind, even at those moments where guys, they bring their box. That's it. They open the box and they say, hey, I'm great. And you should hire me because I'm great. And meanwhile, we are dealing with our spaghetti jumble of all of our thoughts, feelings, emotions happening at one moment. So maybe that we're onto something with that.
Yeah, no, men are definitely more laser focused, I believe. And they're kind of like more single-minded when they're approaching something. And then women are not necessarily, you know, I feel like we are considering many more things. Like our mind is going a lot faster than a man's. We're processing a lot more. We definitely are. And men will admit that.
My husband does.
All the time.
I ask my husband, what are you thinking? What's going on? What does that mean? And he's like, that doesn't mean anything. These are just the words. And right. This is what it is. And I'm not thinking of anything else. And I respect that from him. You know, he's like, please don't read too much into this, because it was just a comment. It was just a statement or just an opinion or a like. And
right. So, yeah. Men, I've asked a lot of men these questions. Like over the years, guy friends, I'm always asking them about their thought process and how they approach things. And they all pretty much say women overthink everything. And men are really just more taking things at face value. They're not doing the analysis, like on the like emotional level that we do. I mean, they're analytical, but it's a different type of analysis that a guy tends to do over a woman. Yeah. And the thought process is different. Although I will say this. So when men, I always had the question, when you say, hey, you look at a guy, what are you thinking? And he says nothing. I never believe that. So many guys said nothing. I said, it is impossible to have your mind devoid of all thoughts. There has to be a thought in your mind at any given moment. And every guy said, no.
No.
When you ask, there's nothing there. But I did find one guy, friend of mine, who I posed that question to, and he said, you always have a thought in your head. You can't not have it. I said, thank you. I think they were all lying to me, because you now just confirmed that there's something up there. Now a man could be thinking about, well, I'm not going to say it because this is a professional podcast. What do you might be thinking about?
Well, yeah.
But the point is there's a thought there. It may not be the thought that the woman would have, but there's a thought there. So it's on a different right. level. So I feel like men, they do a better, again, my observations, a better job of selling themselves. So I'll kind of share an example. This, you know, going back to my career in one of the companies that I worked at. So there was this man who was in a management position, and there was this woman who was in a management position, and we'll call them Dick and Jane. Okay. Just for purposes of this discussion.
Very nicely put, Stacey. Yes. Very nice.
Yes. We'll call him Dick and her Jane, and we'll just leave it at that. So they're both in high level management positions. Now her position is higher than his. He doesn't directly report to her. So on the org chart, she's slightly higher than him. Jane's slightly higher than Dick. Well, anyway, Jane used to have Dick's job. So Dick got interviewed for Jane's job. And what ended up happening was Dick comes in and he takes over Jane's job. And he's one of these people who didn't do his job. He sold himself into the job, but he didn't actually do the job. And he didn't really know a whole heck of a lot. And I had some personal interactions with him where I could tell he didn't know what the hell he was doing. And there was one time I was doing something that was his responsibility. He had gone to my boss and asked her, my boss was Jane, and asked her to have me do this function with this external audit team. And I knew he was passing it off because he didn't know what to do. Oh, there's my phone. I should have shut that off. because he didn't know what to do with these auditors. He couldn't answer their questions. So when the auditors were in my office with me going through some accounts, I said, let me go get Dick and we're going to ask his opinion. So he comes into my office and I said, hey, they're asking me about this, this, and this. Can you please explain what's going on here? And I'm showing it to him. And he gives me an explanation. And I said, well, no, that's not correct. And this is why it's not correct. And so I asked him for try to re-explain, get another explanation from him. Again, he's not giving me the correct information and I'm correcting him in front of this team. He says, can I see you outside for a moment? He pulls me out of my own office to have a conversation with me, then drags me into my boss's office. And he is flipping out on me in front of her because of what just occurred in my office. And Dick is wanting Jane to intervene on his behalf and tell me to like knock it off. So I said, he's just pissed off because I showed them that he doesn't know what he's doing. I was that blunt. And I said, this is his job and I should not be doing it. Now I know Jane didn't like Dick at all. I know this for a fact that she didn't like him. But she kind of brushed him off, asked him to leave the office, and then she begged me to please go back and handle the situation because she couldn't trust him to do it. So she begged me as a personal favor
That story is so pervasive.
Let me continue.
Oh, sorry.
So that like occurred. I go back and I handle it as a favor to her. I was trying to show him for the fraud that he was because he had an issue of pawning off his stuff on everyone because he didn't know what to do. Okay. So this was one run-in that I had with this person. And there were a lot of stories, a lot of issues that other people had with him. So then we fast forward, time goes by. And then eventually, now mind you, Jane was part of hiring Dick over here, who took over her old job. She was part of the interview process. And so I said to her, how is it that this man got past you of all people in an interview? And she said, well, what can I say? He bamboozled us with bull bleep. And that was it. So that kind of illustrates my point. Now here, so check this out. So we go, because there are issues, but again, I think this goes back to, it's not always a systemic problem. I think sometimes it goes back to somebody knowing their worth and advocating for themselves. Mm-hmm. Anyway, long story short, a while after this, this was a publicly traded company. and there were things that were coming out about the financials, and there was a situation where everybody's salary had to be published and it was out on the internet. Dick was making a hell of a lot more than Jane, and more than she was making in her current position. And she was working crazy hours at the office, working from home, wearing all these hats. That was, needless to say, that kind of blew up and ticked some people off when like money came out. But that kind of proves my point that this person was so good at slinging the BS and sucking up to people. He was a big butt kisser, that he was able to get a big fat paycheck based on that, where somebody else was not making what she deserved. However, she refused to advocate for herself. Mm-hmm. So there's that element of that in there too. So that's why I share that story. I believe that he was just really good at work in the system, yeah. But she did not step up and ask for, you know, more money in this particular case. And she really should have fought for it. And maybe she would have gotten it in that situation. And that's unfortunate, because she probably, in my opinion, for all the work she did for that company, she should have been one of the highest paid people in the company other than C-level people. In that particular situation.
But that happens a lot, Stacey. It really does. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to that wise woman that told me, you have to advocate for yourself. If you don't think you're worth more than that. Yes. But the sad thing is that unfortunately, Dick is going to leave that position and he's going to go to another position.
Yes.
And he's going to do the same thing over and over mm-hmm. again. And at that ridiculous salary. So it that's a sad thing to hear that, but it does happen more often than not.
Yeah, it was sad. He delegated all of his work to all his female supervisors, and they covered for him because he would give them perks, like in exchange for, you know, doing that. And he got away with it. And he would come up to the C-level, because eventually I moved up to C-level, and he would come up there and kiss the butts of everybody like in C-level. And I would just be snarky and sarcastic with him. And he thought I liked him. I don't know why he thought that, but anyway. And anyway, he eventually ended up getting fired down the road. And I had a little bit of a hand in pushing that forward, I have to say. So that's something that I definitely had a hand in making happen, like eventually. But no, there was a point to that story. There was just to illustrate that you have these two people who are performing very differently, mm-hmm. and there's a big gap in compensation. And again, I think that that goes both ways. Yes, I do believe there are some systemic problems, but there's also this issue of personal responsibility mm-hmm. and learning how to advocate for yourself. And over the years, that's something I got better at. You know, I mentioned earlier, I sucked at negotiating salary when I first started. I would tell people my absolute bottom line, you know, what that was. And guess what? You get it.
That's what you got.
Get anymore. And so that's not good. So what would you say is your number one piece of advice for negotiating salary?
Go high.
Yes.
Go high. I mean, really, and not ridiculous high. Like, do your research, find out what other people in this, in your industry. I know that AAPC does a salary every year, a salary thing. So does, I think AHIMA does as well. Sometimes they do some salary. There's a lot of other companies out there that do salary surveys, so that you can kind of see what those are. Maybe go on to LinkedIn or to Indeed and look at some of those jobs that you're considering. Maybe they do have some salary transparency there that you can see what you know, what the average person in that role is making, and then go for the stars. You know, go beyond what you think, because the only thing they can do is counter you. You know, yes. And say, we don't have a budget for that. We have a budget for this. And like right. Stacey said, sometimes that budget is way more than what you originally yes. had in mind for that position. And again, know your worth. Know what you're going to bring to the table. If you know that you're going to go in there and within 90 days, you're going to increase the AR. You're going to put a new process in place. You're going to make something more efficient. And you have confidence in yourself that you're going to be able to do that, then that needs to be reflected in your salary requirements or your salary request.
Yeah, definitely. I would say what I learned was always to shoot high, like much higher. Mm-hmm. When you go into an interview, you and you're applying for a job, you know what you want to make. You know in your mind what your absolute bottom line number is going to be, but they don't need to know that. What I would generally do is whatever my bottom line was, I would add about $20,000 to what my bottom line was that I absolutely knew that I had to have. And, but you also, with that said, I wouldn't do that in every situation.
Right.
What I would do when you're in an interview, you can usually get a feel for how the interview is going. And whether or not the person is really interested in you. If you're sensing that they are very impressed with you and there's a high level of interest, then definitely go in for the larger ask. If the interest isn't really there, the vibe isn't really there, probably not going to get the job anyway. Mm-hmm. But I always look for those signs. Like if people were looking at me and I could see their wheels spinning, you know, while they were interviewing with me and I could tell they were like really impressed and they wanted me, I would always go 20, 25,000 higher than what I wanted. And I honestly never had anybody laugh at me or, you know, tell me it was out of the realm of possibility. Now, some people came pretty darn close to the number that I like threw like out there. That's the thing. You don't know unless you ask. Like you said, the worst thing they're going to say is no, they can't, you know, do that. Now, if somebody wants to, I once had when I was really young and I was interviewing with a female, I always preferred interviewing with males. I just did. I found it like it was easier than interviewing with women, just my personal opinion. But whatever the job was, I threw out the number and I think it was like $40,000. But this was years and years and years ago. And I was like newer in my career. And it was a high ask for the position. And she said, "What makes you think you're worth that?" Like really snotty. I thought to myself, did she really just speak to me in that time? So then I had to tell her why I am absolutely worth that amount of money. And she didn't seem to like the fact that I was so bold about it. Well, I'm in this negotiation and the interview had gone amazingly well with the first person who was a male. He was very interested in hiring me. And with her, I'm thinking, yeah, this isn't going so well. Probably not going to get this job offer. In this situation. But no, I always would go again, if the vibe of the interview was good and their interest is high, definitely sometimes I would even go higher than what I had in my head. Yeah. If I felt that there was a really good vibe. So it's really learning how to read people. So what I would recommend, interview for all kinds of stuff. Even if there's something that you're looking and it's something you don't necessarily want, any interview experience, it's experience in an interview. You learn different people, you learn different interview styles. You learn how to better respond to questions. You get more comfortable being in the hot seat. I've had some amazing interviews and I've had some, you know, real, you know, crap show interviews. I have ended up arguing with interviewers, like seriously, in interviews. And it's one of those things when you know you don't want the job and you're just pissed off about the situation. Sometimes you just go for it. Like, don't keep me waiting an hour past my interview time, you know, with no explanation, then drag me through this process and this lengthy interview. And then, which wasn't going that well, then insult me by saying, well, you've never managed people before, so this is a management position. And I just like flipped out. I lost it. I said, just because you've been a manager doesn't mean you're a good one. Blah, 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 blah. I mean, I'm running out late and I'm hangry and I'm not getting this job anyway. So this is not going to end well. So I never went back and interviewed there again, obviously. But, you know, in all these podcast episodes, people are going to learn about how sassy I really can be in certain situations. But so let me kind of, I guess.
Well, let me jump in there, Stacey.
Yes, please talk. I'm supposed to be interviewing you.
That's okay.
It's a discussion. My interviews are discussions. They're not necessarily guest focused. They're discussions.
But you have a lot to talk to bring to the table.
The audience. Yes.
Yeah. So I will tell the audience, by the way, every position that I have wanted, I have received. You have to go in with that mindset. I want this position. I want to be able to do this. And you know, have that positive attitude when you walk in the door.
That comes through to the interviewer. It definitely comes through. Yes.
That there's no other person that is better for this position than you are. Maybe not say those words exactly because that could sound a little pompous. However, have that attitude. You walk in and you're going to portray that you are the best candidate. So have a little bit of attitude when you walk in there. And like you said, don't be afraid to put a number out there. My niece graduated as a veterinarian, and it's her very first job offer. She said, you know, she called me on the phone and she goes, how do I negotiate this? And I said the exact same thing, Stacey. I said, add 20,000 to that number and see what happens. Well, they gave her 15,000 over the original number that she was thinking, but then they gave her a $10,000 benefit package that included all of her insurance. It included all of her fees, all of her dues, all of her CMEs. Yeah. So again, you won't know until you put it out there and have that confidence when you walk in the door. There's nobody better to do this job. And let's have a chat about why I'm going to be able to be the best candidate for you.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Yeah, know what you bring to the table, know your strengths, be able to sell yourself, walk in with confidence. And interviews can be very intimidating. I mean, absolutely, 100%. We've all been there. That process was very painful, you know, when I was, you know, interviewing for jobs and I used to go from employer to employer. I'm so thankful I don't have to do that, you know, anymore. I'm at a point in my career where I work for myself. But again, the more you do it, the better you get at it. And I recommend that people work with recruiters if they can, because recruiters will coach you. They will coach you on resume writing. They will coach you on interviewing. They will help you. Recruiters want to get you placed. Recruiters are good for spotting those people with the talent and the knowledge and expertise, and then helping give them a little bit of polish to get the interview. And then once you get in the interview, perform better in an interview. They have a vested interest in placing you, because when they place you, they get paid.
And so, it's easier to find recruiters now with LinkedIn and Facebook. Yes. You can, you know, do a search of recruiters for your industry. So recruiters for coding, recruiters for billing, for management, medical management positions. So you search out those people and make a connection that way. Hey, how are you? Here's my assets. Do you have anything that I would fit into perfectly? So we have the resources now to make that direct connection with recruiters, where back in the day, they were headhunters, and it was harder to find the headhunters. Yes. And now it's a little bit easier. So that's a wonderful advice there, Stacey.
Yeah. LinkedIn, I feel, is an untapped gold mine in so many different ways. Actually, those of you who are newer listeners, a while back, I did a podcast on getting noticed on LinkedIn. I highly recommend that you go back and listen to that. That is something I wish I would have had years ago. Again, going back to technology and being connected, you know, LinkedIn has been amazing for me personally and professionally. That's how Christine and I, you know, met each other and, you know, became, and I not only have, you know, a great professional in my network, I made a new friend because of it. I've gotten consulting opportunities just from being on LinkedIn, and employers are all over
educational
LinkedIn.
Opportunities. Like I know some of you might be upset with me, but I have all my CEUs done for AAPC through 2023 from LinkedIn, from educational events, from people that are out there, and there's wonderful information. I think that kind of piggybacks to, also, you have to put yourself out there. You have to learn. Yes. This is not an industry that you're ever going to stop learning in, regardless of what the industry is. You need to be on those listservs, get those emails, read those emails, go on LinkedIn, attend useful webinars, and really expand your knowledge out there. And there's so many people out there that want to share their information that have that. So utilize these tools that we have that we never had before.
Yeah. And it's a great place. I've been like reading more about building a personal brand online and building a personal brand on LinkedIn. If you can successfully brand yourself on LinkedIn, and that's a way to show your value to potential employers, if you've branded yourself on LinkedIn. So one last comment I want to make about the salary negotiation is this, and this will give some people a chuckle. And I remember, so for years, friends would always come to me and ask me for advice on salary negotiations. And I would always advise them, and they would come back and say, thank you. That really helped me you know, in this new job negotiating a salary. Well, one time there was a colleague of mine that came up to me. She said, you know, people say you're really good at like negotiating salary. You know, can you give me your advice on that? And I looked her in the eye and I said, this is what you do. I said, you strap on your balls and you negotiate like a man. He just about fell over like when I said that. Now, again, Stacy is very unfiltered in a lot of situations. Now, I do have a filter. I do. I don't say everything that I think, but it was funny because she, I mean, we knew each other professionally. I wouldn't say we were friends, and she's a more conservative person. So she's like, when those words came out of my mouth. But, and I always say that to people when they ask me, that's my standard response, because it's always women who are coming and asking me that. Men never ask me that question. It's women asking me that question. And again, I think there's value. I mean, it's funny to like say it that way, but it supports the comments that I was making that men just, I feel, generally do a better job of selling themselves and portraying the confidence where women do not do as good of a job with that. So if you think when it comes to business, I personally think more like a guy. And this is the reason why I say this. Like, I don't know that I necessarily realize that, but several years ago, there was a webinar about men and women and the differences between men and women and how women think about things and men think about things and how they negotiate and why there's differences in pay and all that. It was an interesting topic. Let me listen to this webinar. So the speaker was talking about how women are raised and how they're brought up and how they're conditioned. And it makes them think a certain way about themselves and negotiations and all that. I wish I could remember the details of the whole thing, but she's talking about how women are conditioned to think and how they process things. And as she's talking, I was thinking to myself, I cannot relate to anything that she's saying. This does not resonate with me whatsoever. When she flipped and started talking about how men are conditioned and raised and how men think in business and how they conduct themselves, oh my gosh, she's describing me. This is how I approach business.
That's a lot of that entrepreneur mindset as well. Like, I totally agree with you, Stacy. And also, I'm first generation here. My parents are from Uruguay, and that was a whole different way of thinking. So when I came here, I was never raised to be in the kitchen. I don't cook. Those who know me, I can't clean. I have a clean house, don't get me wrong. But it's not like I wake up on Saturday, right? I wake up Saturday morning and think, oh, gee whiz, I have to clean my house and bake some bread. Like, that's never going to come out of my mouth. My poor kids, they were raised on cereal. If they didn't have cereal for breakfast, they would just have to wait till they had lunch at school, because I just didn't fit in that role. But work-wise and business-wise and negotiating and running an organization and having that, that came natural to me. That fit like a glove. It felt so normal to me. So I think you're right on the money. It's how we're looking at business. And I don't look at business like your typical woman would. I think I that's why we get along so well, is that we look at it very clean cut. It's business. These are the facts. This is what we have to do. This is how it works. And
In business, it can be challenging, but you have to pull like emotion like off the table in business. But it's also a balance, because this is one thing that I have struggled with. I'm a little bit better at it, but I still struggle with it, because I'm very business minded and I look at everything with that mindset and I pull emotion off the table. Sometimes you can lose people in that process because you're so focused on getting the task at hand completed. You kind of miss that human element. It's like, I've got a one-track mind. I don't want to hear about your personal stuff. We have a job that we need to do. Let's not go there. Where there are sometimes, and you have to stick to that to a certain degree, but there are times that you have to take a step back and listen to somebody and what they're going through and what they're dealing with, and take time to show that empathy and not be so task oriented. In that, when you are, I'm just that person. Here's the list of tasks that need to be done, and let's start ticking them off. I don't want to get into these side things that are going to take us off task. We need to get this completed. And again, that comes with being the manager, being the business owner.
Right. As I was about to say, it's a fine line there, Stacy.
Exactly. Finding that balance of still being empathetic towards people that you're working with. Some people you're working with, they're not working for you. Mm-hmm. And just trying to maintain that human element, yet still get the job done. So that's something, because I'm so focused, I've had a hard time with. And again, I feel men do a little bit better because of that. Women, we're just by nature, we're more emotional and we feel, you know, more. That's how we're designed. And I think it can be a great help. I think one of the reasons why women are so successful in business, I mean, let's face it, we see more women in these high level positions than we ever have. It's an amazing thing to see that. And I think that there are advantages that women have that make them successful to achieve those CEO level positions. And there are distinct differences between men and women, and we each have our strengths. And if we play to them, then we can be equally successful. So I feel, back to kind of my original point, that we do have equal opportunity. I think now more than we ever have, we just need to make sure that we are strongly advocating for ourselves and not waiting around for other people to do it for us. Because even if you're one of those people who is, we need legislation for pay equity, you know, the government needs to intervene. Okay, if that's your position and you believe that, fine, if you want to see that go forward. But in the meantime, we know how quickly the government moves on things. You need to learn how to advocate for yourself right now and fight for yourself right now. Because what if somebody else never steps in to level the playing field for you? You need to be able to do that. So I guess that's the point I'm trying to make. So
it's a great point, Stacey. Perfect.
I mean, we've been talking a lot about this, and I hope I didn't step on anybody's toes or offend anybody. Like, nobody ever emails me about the podcast. This one may strike a nerve with some people. I may get some emails. We'll see. But hopefully those that are listening can understand that I'm looking at this from the different angles. Again, I don't consider myself really extreme. I feel like there's a middle position to be taken on most issues. And I think this is one of them where, yes, collectively we should advocate, for, you know, equality. I'm all for that, because people say, oh, are you a feminist? And I would say no. And they're like, well, but a feminist believes that everybody should be treated equally and that men are the same. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, I agree with that. And I go, I feel like maybe I don't think I'm a feminist because I feel like maybe it's been hijacked. Like, I believe that women are just as capable as men. I think in some ways we do things better than men. We can be more successful than men. And I've personally never felt at a disadvantage being a female, but that's my personal experience. Other people's experiences, that has not been the case. And I understand that. I've never felt at a disadvantage. In some instances, I felt it's been advantageous, actually, to me. So that's looking at it through my lens. So I don't want anybody to feel like I'm diminishing their experiences, because I've been on the receiving end of some crap too from men. We won't get into the hashtag Me Too thing and stuff I've experienced in my career from men. We've all been through that. So I'm probably going to, if you have any final thoughts you want to share in that, feel free, but I'm going to shut that down before I like it somehow, some way. Sometimes I just don't know when to just shut up. So
I agree with you, Stacey. I think, again, some of this is generational. I think we are getting to a better equal playing field out there. But the key to everything is knowing your self-worth. Don't worry about what the other person has got going on. Be your total advocate for yourself and reach for what you need.
Absolutely. So, wow. So we just talked a lot about that. See, that salary question just went all over the place. But again, I think it's a good conversation that needs to be had. Also, going back to most of us in this profession, we are female. And I actually think our profession is one of the better ones at the higher salaries for women, because we are female dominated. It is one of the higher paid professions for females. It just is. And we have men in the profession. I don't know if we were to do a comparison of, you know, let's say HIMA, if they did a salary survey of like men and women in the same jobs, would we see a difference? I don't know. Maybe we'd be the same. Maybe women would be making more. It'd be interesting to see that in an association that is predominantly female, to take a look at statistics there. But I know a lot of people are making great money. We're making six figures and we're doing, you know, really well. And it's not people who own their own business. I'm talking people working for companies and working for facilities. I mean, HIM directors can make over $100,000 a year. There's six-figure salaries. Coding managers can make six-figure mm-hmm. salaries. It's mm-hmm. definitely there.
That brings us to the end of part two of my interview with Christine Hall. I hope that you gained some useful tips on how to increase your salary. Now go on out and make employers show you the money. As always, I want to say thank you to my loyal listeners for tuning in. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to take a moment to give the podcast a five-star rating. If you have feedback you'd like to share on an episode or topic suggestion, please send an email to podcast@radrx.com. That's podcast@radrx.com. And I would still love to start an Ask Stacy segment, so please submit any questions you would like answered in a future episode to askstacy@radrx.com. That's askstacy, that's Stacy, S-T-A-C-I-E, at radrx.com. Thanks again for tuning in and have an amazing week.
Thank you for listening to Who Cares What Stacy Says? You can connect with Stacy on social media. You can find her business page for RadRx on Facebook, and you can connect with her personally on LinkedIn. Don't forget to check out the online training courses offered by RadRx: Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology Online Training, or Cracking the Diagnostic Radiology Code Online Training. Thanks again for tuning in to Who Cares What Stacy Says? A podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level.